Up next, it's John Latimer's Phenology Report. If you're listening to me right now, I'm Heidi Holton. It might be through our webpage, kexe.org, or maybe you're getting this on the Season Watch podcast. We're now bringing you John's Phenology Report each week, and then at the end of the week, you'll still be getting that Season Watch that is a mix of conversations throughout the week, and me and Charlie Mitchell talking about what we are seeing, including, no doubt, we'll be talking this week about the wood ducks that are in the house and will soon be jumping out at my house. We always want to hear from you. You can text 218-326-1234. Just a little pro tip for the Phenology Report coming up next. While I listen to John, I'm sitting down and at a desk, so I Google the flowers that he's talking about. So I'm not recommending this if you're in the car. If you're a passenger in the car, maybe that's going to be a lot of fun. But you're going to want to look up things like creeping bellflower and fireweed and tall meadow rue. Because as John talks about them, then I see a photo and I think, oh, I've seen those before.
It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. I had the pleasure and a bit of an unusual experience of being in the Twin Cities. I was in Buffalo, which is west of the Twin Cities, and then Faribault. And so I had a chance to see some other areas and some other plants, and just had a wonderful time. There's a tall bellflower that blooms down in the forests in Faribault. The River Bend Nature Center in Faribault is well worth a visit. The Strait River, another Strait River, Dallas, I know that you are familiar. Steve, same. I know you boys both fish the Strait up in the Park Rapids area. There's a Strait River down in Faribault as well, and the part of it that I saw was not straight, but it definitely was flowing quite rapidly. It would have been difficult, probably impossible, for any but the strongest swimmers to hold against the current that was flowing through there. It would have taken a real effort, and probably would have had to go to the edge of the stream in order to even stay with it. One of the funny things that unusual for me, because we don't have that kind of soil. I live on sand dunes left over from a glacial lake. These guys are on the limestone ridges, and Faribault is just sort of the end of the glaciation part of Minnesota. When you get south and east of Faribault, you run into the trackless, or the what's the term? It's escaped me. At any rate, it's the driftless area that had not been glaciated. And one of the things that was so immediately impressive to me is that we got down to the edge of the river, and the kids were, I was with about half a dozen or seven teenagers, and they were skipping rocks in the river, and one of the kids picked up a rock, and he was about to throw it, and he stopped, and he goes, oh, this one's a fossil. And in that sea bottom, which was what that area was, a lot of little animals got fossilized in the limestone, and it didn't take too much. I think this young boy that was doing this quickly found two rocks, both of which had fossil evidence in them. Small plants, but nonetheless fossils, and it's something that I don't see very often up here. We did come across a nice glacial erratic, a stone the size of half of a house, easily the size of a camper, I guess, and it was just laying there along the edge of the walkway, and you could easily look at it and say, well, that that didn't get dumped there by anything other than the glacier, and it was pretty spectacular. So they were glaciated in Faribault, but just on the edge of the driftless area, so very cool. lots of interesting plants to look at, hackberry and walnut and butternut and just a lot of flowers and plants that I don't see. The kids told me that, of course, they are one of the few places in the state, one of the few counties in the state where trout lilies actually grow. So they were telling me about the trout lilies as well. And we're going to hear a report from them coming up later this morning. Locally, I just made a quick list of plants that I found in bloom this last week. Common mullein, that tall, pale green stalk, big leaves at the base and then tapering off to no leaves and just a big top with bright yellow flowers on it. That is blooming. Evening primrose, which looks a lot like mullein. If you only were looking at the flower and not paying real close attention, it's another stalk with bright yellow flowers on it. But there are obvious differences when you look at both of them. But if you're seeing these high stalked flowers that the flowers are growing on a very tight, cone shape or broom handle shape flower head. Those are either evening primrose or mullein. And the mullein is going to have big, soft leaves, very hairy, soft leaves. The evening primrose, not so much. Their leaves are going to be much more uniform and sort of not nearly as hairy as the mullein. Vervain is also blooming. Vervain is a interesting plant. European version of vervain was... You would harvest a bunch of it and hang it over your door. It was a means of keeping the evil spirits out of your house. Around here, maybe not so much. I don't have a lot of vervain at my house, nor do I have a lot of evil spirits, or maybe I'm just not aware of them. But at any rate, the vervain has begun to bloom. Driving south from Grand Rapids and heading toward the cities or toward Buffalo, my wife and I came across wild parsnip. And wild parsnip is an interesting plant. The flower is a flat disc of yellow flowers, and they look a lot like dill. So if you know what dill looks like, look for these flowers. They're going to be much taller than dill. Some of these plants will be 7 or 8 feet tall. And they'll have these flat discs of yellow flowers. They have bigger leaves than dill. Dill leaves are almost nothing. They are reduced to just little thin strings almost. But the wild parsnip has a much bigger leaf. And the interesting thing about wild parsnip is that it reacts with your skin and with sunlight to promote burning. And you, if you get into this wild parsnip and get the sap on your skin, it doesn't take very long for the sun to cause your skin to blister up right there. So wild parsnip, got to be watching out for that. I noticed a lot of it on Highway 200 going towards Walker, and there was also quite a bit of it going down Highway 169 north of Aiken. Among the clovers that are blooming right now are two really obvious ones, yellow sweet clover and white sweet clover. And when you think of clover, you don't think of these plants. When I think of clover, I think of the white Dutchman's clover. I think of the red clover. I don't think of these sweet clovers, the white and the yellow sweet clover. These are tall, leggy plants that have these long branching flower heads that stick out in every direction, tiny white or yellow flowers all over them, and they grow in great profusion along the edges of the roads right now. So keep an eye out for those. Early goldenrod began to bloom this last week. Birdsfoot trefoil is probably reaching its first peak of flower. Tall meadow rue. If you're driving along and you see these plants that are 5 or 6 feet tall, and from the road they look like a little cloud of white, That is probably tall meadow rue. And if you go over and look at the flowers, you'll see that they look a lot like the dangly parts of a chandelier. Tall meadow rue. Bindweed is blooming right now, and there are two kinds of bindweed that I see in bloom right now. One is called hedge bindweed, and that one has a 2 to 3 inch wide trumpet-shaped bell of a flower that is sometimes tinged with pink and sometimes is just white, but it's a very large trumpet-shaped flower. And it grows on this vining plant called hedge bindweed. Now, the flower looks like morning glory. And in fact, just about everybody who sees it, with if they haven't much experience with the local flowers, they would call it morning glory. But it is not, because the leaves are different. The morning glory leaf is heart-shaped. And the leaf of the bindweed is more like the shape of a spearhead. So not at all the same leaf, and the flower looks very similar, but the leaf is totally different. That's hedge bindweed. There's another bindweed called low bindweed, and the low bindweed has exactly the same flower as the hedge bindweed. Well, tiny bit smaller maybe, but white, tinging pink. But the low bindweed only grows maybe 6 to 8 or 10 inches tall, and it'll have one, maybe two flowers on the plant. It does not vine, it's just a small upright plant, but the flower is very similar to the hedge bindweed, and the leaves are too, so you shouldn't have any trouble ruling out the morning glory, because the morning glory has that heart-shaped leaf. This past week, in fact, it was a week ago on Tuesday, just a week ago today, I saw my first fireweed in bloom. And fireweed is that magenta flower. It grows in big clumps. It gets its name fireweed because it quickly recolonizes areas after a fire. Right now, you see the magenta flowers. As they become fertilized, they're going to turn into magenta seed pods. And ultimately, those seed pods will spring open, and then you'll have these kind of curled white fluff that are going to be the seeds floating around from the fireweed. Looking at fireweed over the years, the average first date for bloom is the 30th of June, the very end of June. Looking at all of the data that I've collected over the 40 years or so that I've followed this plant, until you get to about 2000, things run pretty evenly. And after that, there's a huge explosion of later blooms. And so the trend line, given the 40 years or so that I've looked at it, the trend line is toward a later bloom, more than 5 days later than the first averages back in the early 80s. And later, well, I don't know why. I just know that that's what my observations have yielded to me. Part of this later bloom might be the fact that I'm not out driving around 100 miles every day. And sometimes, that patch of fireweed over there blooms a little bit earlier or a little bit later. And unless I happen to be driving by it, I'm not likely to notice. Another flower that is blooming right now and is pretty easily identified is one called Creeping Bellflower. And it is a blue flower and bell-shaped. And how do I sort this one from all the other bell-shaped blue flowers? Well, this one grows almost exclusively on one side of the stalk. So it puts up a 12-inch stalk of flowers at the top of the plant, and it will have all of the flowers will be on the same side of that stalk. And so that's how you know Creeping Bellflower. Winterberry or Northern Holly is just beginning to bloom, just started blooming this last week. And Basswoods just started blooming this last week, which is about average. Basswoods, the 9th of July is the average first date. In the case of Northern Holly, the average first date is the 2nd of July. Both of them were pretty close. There's a big, tall plant out there called spikenard. And spikenard is amazing in that it grows to be about 4 feet high every year from the ground. And then it puts out these wonderful clusters of white flowers that then sort of morph into these purple berries. And it's edible and not too bad. You can make a syrup from it. There are a lot of good ways to fix spikenard. Rabbit's foot clover, right along the edge of the road, that grayish, pinkish, fuzzy-looking flower, which is, if you look at it closely, you would instantly recognize it as a clover flower. That is just beginning to bloom. Swamp milkweed has been blooming for a while, but right now it's really starting to kick in. Joe pieweed is up, but not yet blooming. I suspect the area I'm looking at has been recently mowed, so I don't know what to expect there, but I do know that so far there haven't been any observable flowers from Joe pieweed. Boneset, which is another Eupatorium, pieweed and boneset are cousins. The pieweed is purple and the boneset is white. The flowers are remarkably similar, and the boneset gets its name because the leaves join at the stem. They sort of fuse together at the stem of the plant. And they, 400 years ago, seeing a plant do that, they thought, well, you get a broken leg, we'll just put some of this boneset on there. It will promote the heal. Probably not, and especially for a broken bone, but maybe if they splinted you at the same time, you'd come out of it okay. And my final note for plants is that the smooth sumac are coming into flower right now and just now are beginning to get sour. So if you have sumac in your neighborhood, just rub the flower head with your fingers and then touch your finger to your tongue and you will taste the sour that is there. You can harvest the flowers, bring them home, pour hot water through them, catch the water, cool it, and you will have a pretty passable lemonade. Smooth sumac does that. Insects, 12 spotted skimmers. These are dragonflies, widow skimmers. The monarch butterflies are out flying around. These are the second generation. These are the ones that emerged from eggs that were laid by the first generation that arrived here. So we were watching for those. I saw a tiger swallowtail this last week. I don't know how many more of those I will see. The bald eagle has been learning to fly. I've actually seen it in the air a few times practicing, and it returns quickly to the nest. And while it's on the nest, it is very actively crying and hoping that mom and dad will bring it some food. So if you're near an eagle's nest right now, you're probably hearing the baby eagles screaming for food, hoping that mom and dad will step up. There are not a lot of birds calling anymore. They're getting to be fewer and fewer each day. But what I have noticed over the last week or so is that the robins are calling quite vociferously. Also, the veery, which is that fear, fear, fear. And they're calling quite a bit. Red-eyed vireos are calling. Not much more. Those are the common, easy-to-hear ones. And so I've been listening to them. And finally, the hay fields near my home got harvested this last week, starting on Friday. They cut the hay on Friday, and they were raking it up and getting the bales made on Saturday. And what that does is it kind of opens up the fields, and you get these kestrels, which are a small falcon that eats a lot of grasshoppers. They have come back to the fields, and the northern harriers have come back to the fields. And the northern harriers are harriers. They can hover, they can float over the tops of the fields this way and that as they look for mice who are caught out away from their little hideouts. this time of year, and especially right after the hay has been mowed, it's kind of a risky time to be out if you're one of those small critters. That's the Phenology Show for this week. Thanks for tuning in. Always this time of year, lots to talk about. But don't forget, if you have observations you'd like to share, we would love to hear from you.
Don't forget, we'll bring you more nature later this week, coming through the Season Watch podcast, or check it out at kexc.org. Tell your friends and neighbors, this Season Watch is made possible by people like you. It's created by KAXC, the first rural public radio station in the nation, no longer getting federal funding, just like every other public media across our country. And listeners like you make it possible. Consider a donation. Go to kaxc.org. Thanks for listening.